CRJ227, this is your final podcast, your podcast for weeks number 7 and 8 for the summer term. So we made it to the end. You got to pay attention to the deadlines, so here's what's going to happen. There's an assignment for week number 7. It's on the same deadlines as normally expected, so original post by Thursday of week 7 and then respond by Monday of week 8, but week 8 is also going to open up Wednesday of week 7, and it's a shorter week, so you're going to need to be planning your time and working a little bit ahead. For week 7, there's a couple articles and a case I need you to read. If you haven't done that, as noted on the assignment form, then please go do that, because it's not going to make any sense what I'm going to talk about until you do. So stop and go back and do that. And then there's a couple parts to the week 7 assignment. And essentially I'm asking you to find an Illinois criminal case that deals with an issue related to what I'm going to talk about in this podcast, and then kind of break that down based on the parameters that I'm asking you to break it down. And then week 8, there is no podcast, this is it, and there's no additional reading. So pay attention to what I'm asking you to do for week 8. You're finding a case. You can't use a case you've used in the past, so don't do that, okay? I'll probably figure that out. Maybe you'll slip one by me. If you want to slip one by me, then what do you want to be in this area, you know, this career field for? Because you're going to take an oath, or be expected to work under a code of ethics where we say we don't do those things. All right, so find an original case, something new to you, something somebody else hasn't already talked about in the class. Just go out there and do your best. New cases come out every day. It's not that difficult, but be intentional about it, okay? And wrap up the semester with that. But note that there's different deadlines, and it's Tuesday and Thursday of week 8. So Tuesday at 10 p.m. and Thursday at 10 p.m. because then we're done. So pay attention to that. Now, getting back to week 7, where we're talking about interviewing, often called interrogations. My version of the law, I really don't think the law, at least not the United States version of the law, expected what police do in investigating a crime by talking to a suspect to be an interrogation. But it's the term that we see in the courts, and in some cases, it reflects the actions of the police, especially in the days before recorded interviews. You know, I'll share some of that. I've shared some of my background. I'll share some of that and why I feel that way. You know, I suggest that you go into these situations, if you ever have the opportunity to go into these situations. And for the legal studies students who have me for civil litigation, you know that I very much distinguish this. And those of you who have me for civil litigation in the fall, you'll hear me talk about this. And on the civil side of things, it is definitely not an interrogation. And a lot of you will go out in a civil case and talk to somebody, witnesses and your client, about the facts of something. And it's very much going to be an interview, because they don't have to talk to you. And you can't put them in jail, and you can't lock them in a room, and you can't handcuff them. It's an interview. And, you know, if you go about it hardcore, you won't get anything. And I'll talk about that in that class, but some of you have heard it if you've already had civil litigation. I'm going to suggest to you that if you're in policing and you have the opportunity to talk to a potential suspect or a witness or anybody else, and you go about it from an interrogation mindset, you're going to get not so great results. You may have heard me talk about, there's a show that I particularly enjoy and suggest students watch. It's called In the First 48. If you're not familiar with that show, I forget what channel it's on, A&E or it's one of those channels. Essentially, it's based on the premise that the first 48 hours after a murder are the most important in the investigation, and it tracks various officers, investigators, detectives from different departments. And there's the Tulsa, Oklahoma crew. It seems like they've been following those guys for like 30 years. I mean, and there's some of them that are very good. I think it's Jason White is the one that I particularly like just because of his approach. He's old school. He talks to people. He interviews them. He doesn't interrogate them. Now, when the facts start coming out, he does hold them to the facts as he knows it. That's not an interrogation. I always suggest that you go into these situations with an interview rather than an interrogation mentality. And if you do, I guarantee you're going to get better results. An interrogation mentality, in my experience, at a minimum, seems to bolster a defendant's argument as to violated rights, even when they clearly committed the crime. Experience of the cases that I've worked, it's shown that you don't have to run that risk. Go and watch that show and that Tulsa crew. And you'll see it. It's one of the best examples out there available. I'm hoping they're showing some of those tactics in other classes. It goes back to some of the things that we've talked about and your ability to have interpersonal communication with the people you encounter and the willingness to go and work that, to do it, to seek out conversations with people, even when it's not about anything that someone's alleged to have done wrong. Make yourself available. If you're on the street, if you go to the Hy-Vee to respond to a call, the call's taken over or it's done. You're walking out. Somebody catches your eye. Say hello. Don't be all business. And part of that interrogation mentality, it just gets to be too much all business. And we're not in a time of war. And here's what's the kicker. In our justice system, the person's presumed innocent until proven guilty. Now, you may think in your mind that they're guilty. You may have good reason to believe that. But I guarantee if you go at the interrogation rather than the interview mindset, where you go with that interview, with those questions, will result in you potentially screwing up what you ultimately want to end up with, and that's an admission or a confession. Those are two different things, and we're not going to cover that here. The 230 course will cover it in greater detail, but ideally we get a confession, a full confession. Now, I've shared some of my professional timeline and experiences over the course of the summer. And it was back in my time defending the state in major appeals through the Illinois Attorney General's office and the state and federal courts that I really saw some concerning allegations. And sometimes I had to believe that the allegations may have been true and probably were true. I know, and sometimes I knew they were true. And I was struck by some pretty dumb and clearly wrong applications of the law of procedure by the people who were my pseudo clients in those appeals, the arresting or investigating police officers. And I've shared some of those examples along the way. You may have heard me share, if I didn't share it in this class, I've shared it in other classes way back. I had a case where an individual stabbed his girlfriend multiple times. He was drunk and high when the officers arrived, the responding officers to the apartment. It took by all accounts, a couple hours from the initial call of neighbors concerned about screaming to the time they got there. So it's unclear as to when he was high or drunk, if he continued on his spree after. But what was pretty clear was that when the officers arrived, the individual was wearing his boxer shorts and a t-shirt and was covered in blood and was fairly incoherent. So he's taken to the police station. He's put in what I call an interview room. They took his clothes, his underwear, and his t-shirt, bloody underwear and t-shirt, because that was, of course, evidence. Gave him a blanket. He wrapped up in the blanket, and that's how he was kept, and that's where he was kept for over the next 24 hours, where the initial set of detectives and another set of detectives proceeded to ask him questions and questions and questions and questions. There was no audio or video recording back in those days, at least not in that department at that time. So there's no independent record. And at some point, he wrote out a confession. And he was convicted, of course. Now, this is in the days of the death penalty. And at the time that I ended up participating in defending the state or the prosecution then and everything that happened in the underlying criminal case, by that time, it was many years later. I'm pretty convinced, and we did win the appeal, the individual did commit the act. Now, we didn't have DNA by then. They didn't have DNA when the arrest took place. By the time we were arguing this appeal, DNA was really just being something that was being facilitated on a larger scale and recognized by the courts. But there was physical evidence, significant physical evidence, obviously with the, you know, the circumstances of the murder that I described. But the individual's argument about his confession was based on the reasonableness of the circumstances in which it was elicited. In other words, he was wrapped in a blanket, naked, kept there for over 24 hours in the same room, and continuously asked questions by the detectives. His argument was that he really didn't know the details of what he confessed to, but he eventually confessed and spit back details he garnered after all that time from their questions and the way they formed their questions. Now, you see that argument made often. What was uncontroverted, the detectives that were present when he offered to confess, apparently, and from the defendant, was at some point he said, "Give me a cigarette, chance to get some clothes on." "Let me have something to eat. I'll tell you everything you want to know." And at that point, that's when he gave his confession. The circumstances were not so clear as to who wrote the confession out. But his argument on appeal was that the confession was essentially him spitting back details of something that he garnered after all that time under those circumstances in that interview room. Now remember, he was high and drunk. That wasn't a dispute in fact. So, you know, who knows what he remembers of the circumstance or not. In any event, there was other evidence. And if you go to take the 230 course, you took the 230 course, this kind of goes back to what I always talk about as far as circumstantial evidence and connecting the dots, right? Bottom line, and following various other comments this summer concerning body and dash cams and the plain and very clear expectation that other people or various forms of surveillance cameras could be recording your actions on video, we moved to an expectation that interviews should be recorded, period. Preferably by audio and video. And it wasn't long ago that some of the departments locally and nationwide didn't have the video component. Well, post-COVID, video and audio should be part of the interview. And if that's the case, and go back to my recommendation that you check out in the first 48, and in particular the Tulsa unit. If that's the case, and the law is either likely followed any ensuing confession obtained during the interview should be adequate. I mean, when you go and watch that show, and one of the reasons I always suggest that you watch that show for any of the courses I teach is because you have this propensity, or the public has the propensity, to believe that what happens is dramatic, is sensational. And most of the times what happens is sad. It's just sad. And it's not dramatic. As a general rule, it's not dramatic. It's not dun-dun-dun. It's not television material. It's an interview where you see the breath of humanity, and sometimes you see people confess. A lot of times you see people just clam up and refuse to take responsibility, and most of those people end up getting convicted anyway, because there's, as in the case I described, other evidence. But the bottom line is, for those of you going out there to do this type of work, you know, make sure it's recorded. Audio and video. When it's audio and video recorded, you don't see as many dumb decisions. Now, you still do on occasion, and on occasion you still see intentionally stupid or heinous acts by police, even when there is video. But with the video and audio in an interview setting, you generally don't see it, because you, as the investigator, know. And you're even on a heightened awareness, I need to follow the law. I need to follow the procedures of the department. I need to make sure that I do this by the book. So we get what we need legally, and any conviction is upheld. What we don't want is for, and especially where the person was, you know, guilty, the interview or any admission or confession being tossed out, and as a result, the conviction being tossed out. And again, for more on admissions versus a confession, you know, refer back to or look at it hard when you take CRJ 230. Now remember, we always have to consider our old friend Miranda. This is probably the most important element of the interview from the legal point of view. Don't play with it. Don't be cute with its requirements. Cover it by the book the same way every time. You know, get good information, solid investigations, arrests, and convictions. Historically, agencies have adopted a Miranda protocol that requires officers to recite the four-part warning, ask the suspect if they understand, and then ask if the suspect is willing to talk. And if the officer is confident the suspect wants to talk, most departments will have a written waiver, a document that can be signed by the suspect before they talk. Most departments utilize a form that contains the following: before we ask you any questions, you must understand your rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you before any questioning if you wish one. You can decide at any time from this moment on to terminate the interview and exercise any of these rights. Do you understand each of these rights I have explained to you? Having these rights in mind, do you wish to talk to us now? And then the document has a statement that in most cases says something to the effect of, I've read and understand fully each of my rights, and I'm willing to answer questions and make a statement at this time. I do not want the advice of an attorney at this time. I understand and know what I am doing. No promises or threats have been made to me. And then there's a place for their signature, the date, and the time. Now, I mentioned this along the way when I talked to you about when you are moving from that stop to arrest stage, when you're moving from that, you know, stop, frisk, to detain, arrest, and you want to start asking specific questions about a specific alleged act out on the street. And what did I suggest? Well, you have your department issued Miranda card, and you keep that with you as an as important part of your uniform and your equipment as anything else you have on your duty belt. And keep it up in your lapel pocket or somewhere close. You make sure it's there. You pull it out. You read from that card. You can get it videoed, fine. It's at least going to be audioed. The suspect should be in front of you on your camera. And if somebody else is there, hopefully they're positioned in a place where they can have on theirs you reading from your Miranda card. This is part and parcel to that, and it's the same reasoning. But again, don't play. You're going to find as you age, when you try to force most anything, it doesn't work out well. An interview will lead to valid and justified confessions if you follow the law, the procedures you are trained to follow, and you work the interview. Just do the work. You work the interview and the investigation, you do the work. If you've worked your investigation, you're going to have facts and you're going to have things you can use in the interview to elicit some sort of response and possibly a confession. If you try to force a confession, force the outcome, it will end up like most things we try to force in life: results we didn't want or didn't deserve, and somebody's going to pay the price. And sometimes, folks, someone pays the price in those circumstances with an unjustified conviction. Those things happen because of bad practices. Innocent people get convicted. Don't lose sight of that. So there's a whole other reason. I mean, you wouldn't want to be that person who was innocently convicted because of bad police work, right? Just the same, you don't want people that shouldn't be out on the street or able to move away from and escape their liability for crimes committed, especially heinous crimes, because of bad police work. Follow the law. So again, as a reminder, for week 8, the expectation is a little different, and so is the timeline. That assignment will open earlier on Wednesday of week 7. Pay attention to the deadlines. Meet those expectations. And as I said, this is the final podcast for this semester. So if you're leaving us after this semester, you're going on to another college, or university or employment, or you're just done with your program, stay well and keep in touch and let us know what you're doing with your next career education journey. Check back in, use us for references, and don't hesitate to reach out about jobs or education options. And that's the same for the rest of you, those that are staying. If I have you for fall or next spring, look forward to seeing you. But if you need me for anything related to your education or jobs, you know, let me know. Otherwise, knock out these final 2 weeks. And as always, if you need me, you know where to find me.